This is...
Wow! What a week.
What a week. Politrix.
We are back. Welcome to another edition of Hashtag Politrix with Butsang Mudimo Amemuilwa. We'd like to think that our resident politics commentator does a great job. We'd actually like it if he had more of a following. However, we are glad to know he won't be burning flags or images of his rivals in some attempt to scare people into following him, unlike some people in the political arena. So please give a wow welcome, a flag waving welcome back to Butsang Mudimo Wame Muilwa. My dude.
Good morning, Fresh.
What's going on?
And your flex, what's going on with what? It's still me.
Like, did you get an image consultant? Our Jola? What's happening?
Nothing. This is my old look, by the way. 5 years back, I used to look like this. I miss work and suits. And I just decided I need a change. It's a new leaf. Change is important. There's nothing to do with Jola.
Okay, so it has nothing to do with the lady you're trying to impress?
No. There's nobody that I'm trying to impress. But it may be an opportunity, creative moment, where those who thought I'm scurvy and not clean.
Unkempt,
yeah.
You know, I could have walked past you. I could have walked past you.
No, I saw when I walked to the studio, the usual people that are greeting me outside and the pie shop, and they were like, is it him?
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's also not just the shaving and the dress code. You know, I hardly wear suits.
Yo. Anyway, let's get straight into it. Elections, IEC, MK, Concord, Dear Advert, the backlash, the ANC flip-flopping on Zuma. A lot is happening.
Yeah, well, this is an interesting time. But you know, I think the one that was a highlight of the week is the DA advert.
Yeah.
That backlash that came from especially from social media. But first, let me tell you, people think social media has a big influence on politics in South Africa. It doesn't. Only to a small, tiny minority.
I laughed the other day when I saw a post on Instagram, someone saying, Alona, you guys only hate the ANC on social media. On the street.
On the street, yeah.
There's love.
Yeah, no. And the ANC knows that game. And how many people have access to data and social media? A fraction of the population. But with the DA, let me be frank and saying, you see, it's how people react to the thing. The DA went on. If you looked at that whole advert, and I have to be fair and square, you know, from a political perspective, if you look at it, it is actually the DA saying to the nation, if you continue to vote the ANC and the EFF and others who are the leftists or extremists and corrupt as they define them, this is what will happen to this flag that we have built over the years. Mm. But if you vote the DA, then the advert followed with a brand new, you know, ravishing South African flag that's not banned, to say, in order to protect this flag, this is you should vote the DA. That is the explanation. However, I've seen people like even Professor Chulima Donsela coming out and Clayson Munyele and others saying, but it is distasteful to ban the national flag. But they're sending a message to say this national flag.
So are you saying for that message to have landed, it was necessary for the creative to be the way it was?
If one looks at it from a creative point of view and to send the message, and look, it may have been received wrong by those who think or who are patriotic, who think banning the flag, it's not the right thing to do. In other countries, this is actually illegal. It's a criminal offense to ban the national flag. It may have landed it, especially to the supporters of the EFF and the ANC. But one has to look at it from a political point of view to say they were making a political statement, distasteful one for others. But who said you should make tasteful political adverts that will satisfy your opposition? You understand? They corrected it at the end of the advert. And look, I'm not a supporter of the DA and I'm not subscribing to them, but I'm applying my mind to what they were trying to do, whether they were successful or not.
Okay, so you're trying to be objective about it?
Yes, I'm just being objective.
At a political level?
At a political level. Okay. To say they were sending a political statement, but also I sat down and I recalled what I have done in life and what I've seen in political arenas. For example, I take the national flag as equivalent to a national anthem, you know, the importance. But have you seen that at EFF and PAC and BLF, all the supposed to be leftists, when the national anthem of the Republic of South Africa is being performed, they don't perform it. They stop at the old Nkosikelele Africa only. They don't perform the part of the stem and the English version. They don't. And nobody has ever said it's an insult to the national anthem. And so... So I think they are doing it in the same way. It's just that the DA one, it was on TV, on social media, and so forth. But for me, it's the same. If the national anthem is being performed, and some of us will say, when it arrives at the point where they sing this theme, I'll keep quiet. And it's my political statement to say. And actually, looking at it, the Afrikaans, this theme part of the national anthem, it resonates very well with people who are talking about land, because they're talking about the land and the wealth. But look, our national flag, it's a compromising flag. It's a political negotiated settlement flag. And it will continue to be abused over time for some time to come. Sure. That is my interpretation. And, you know, I've put my I've applied my mind very well to what the DA was trying to do. Was it distasteful? I think it was. But it was a creative artwork that talks and resonates with their political line.
Sure. Absolutely. The ANC flip-flopping on Zuma and the SG tweets on how they infiltrated the MK?
Yeah, look, I think they...
So initially, there was supposed to have been a disciplinary hearing at Luthuli House this past week.
Yes.
And then they decided that, nope, we don't want another shell house.
Yeah.
In essence, it is.
Yes.
What are your thoughts on it?
First of all, I think it was a wise decision.
Sure.
It was a wise decision on two grounds. One, we know that wherever Ntate Jacob Zuma goes, the former president, he pulls scouts. It becomes a mini rally. You don't want, and we have been saying they've been promoting and giving a platform and airtime.
Sure.
Understand? You don't want to continue to do that. I think they've heard enough now. The second thing is, look, if there's a security risk, for the first time, the ANC have applied their mind very well regarding the security aspect of it. You remember what transpired the day the DA and other people marched to the Luthuli House. People were beaten, injured, and so forth. I think it was a move in the right direction to avoid skirmishes, to avoid fights, you know, to avoid trials. It was going to be unsafe. They've said they've done a security analysis, and the report and the advice came out and recommendation to say, do not proceed with this. One, at Luthuli House. Two, at this juncture when there's heated political debates pro-elections. So they've decided to postpone it to after the elections. But they handled it very clumsy, the communique. When they knew that they have outsourced the services of security personnel or advisors, they should have communicated that to their DC to say, do not proceed with the processes. I do understand why, and I read the ANC constitution, why the DC was under pressure. Their constitution prescribes, the ANC constitution prescribes that once you have been suspended and given notice that you are being investigated, you have 6 months. And remember, they communicated in January.
Sure.
So they have 6 months from the time they wrote to Ntate Zuma to make him face a disciplinary hearing. The DC was doing its job, but there was lack of communication between the SG and the DC's office. So, it's postponed until after the elections, which puts down a little bit of settlement in that matter and stop focusing on the former president. But still, they still have, as our viewers will be watching this show, there would have been a Concord decision regarding the MK, the appeal to the Concord and Jacob Zuma and so forth. Look, we've already seen people come out gun blazing against Zuma to say he wants to change the constitution, he wants to dictate who should preside over his cases. But again, guys, Tato, what I always say is, if we have rules and regulations and laws, and we are happy when others apply them and we are not happy when others do not apply them, that's not democratic. We praise and we sing democracy when other people use the rules. We have laws. It is a regulation and a court process in this country to say if you are not comfortable with the presiding officer for whatever reasons, and those reasons are stated, you can exercise your right and ask them to recuse themselves from the process. Now, Jacob Zuma is doing that and people are crying. Whether he is doing it as a delaying tactic maliciously or messing up with our minds. That's not the issue. The issue is he's got a democratic and a legal right to can do that. Mm. And in my view, the same Concord judges that presided over sending him to jail, about six of them, over sending him to jail, are the ones who are going to be part of the eight who are going to preside on deciding whether he qualifies because of that sending to jail. Let's leave Jacob Zuma out of this. Let's say it was Mr. X. Is it fine that Judge A, B, C, D, and E have sent Mr. X to jail, and now he's appealing about the consequences of being in jail, and the same people are going to preside over that, even if we say judges are supposed to be independent? Mm. They're still human beings. Is it fair that somebody who have sent you to jail is somebody who's going to preside over what you went to jail for or the outcomes and of you being in jail? But I think what was good is that the Chief Justice Zondo has recused himself from anything that has to do with Jacob Zuma, whether it's civil or what, new
in
old,
advance.
In advance, I'm not involved with this man anymore, and you know his Barima Koti son-in-law, whatever. So now it leaves the other five to decide whether they're going to do this. I think the Concord is faced with a very difficult decision. Unfortunately, they will have to make a decision because this is going to have an impact on the elections and whether, again, this is not supposed to have an impact whether Jacob Zuma appears on the ballot paper or not. It's not supposed. I still stand by my decision. It should have an impact on whether he qualifies to be in the National Assembly or not.
And they will deal with that
thing. The most logical thing for me would have been them saying, we will deal with that after, when it's time to go to the National Assembly.
Exactly.
Not now. Why do you want to rattle issues now and cause instability on elections? So, but in the middle of that, the MK founder member, Ntate Khumalo, stands up and says, I fired Jacob Zuma. Jacob Zuma says, I fired you. Then Fikile Mbalula, the Secretary General of the ANC, stands up and tweets. You know, he deleted that tweet sadly after over 4,000 views to say we have paid people to disrupt this MK thing before the 29th. And or by the
But 29th. Why would he tweet that, though?
Yeah, but that's him. That's being reckless. He's no longer Mr. Fear Focal. He is now Mr. Mess Up Everything. So he tweeted that and he deleted it. It was too late. We had screenshot. Look, I subscribe. I follow him on Twitter. So and if I have my Twitter on, it will pop up on my screen. Then I do a screenshot immediately. Even if you delete it, the message is out there.
An infiltration 101. Not even in 20 years do you say we infiltrated anything.
Exactly.
Not even in 20 years.
You keep quiet. You take it to the grave. You take it to the grave. And this is what they are lacking. Look, we knew, and I said to somebody last week, it is common cause in politics that political parties will have people infiltrating the others. It's normal all over the world.
Yeah, they plant people.
They plant people, they pay people and all that. I expected what is happening in MK to happen. I expected some people to go back to the ANC a week before elections. I expected that the ANC will pay people and vice versa. I know for the fact that MK party has people who are still in the ANC, in the NEC of the ANC, and they're doing work. They are funding the MK. They are sending information. That's why Zuma is forever two, three steps ahead of them. And it's normal. It happens. I don't say it's correct, but it happens. Sure. It's in line with politics. But for the SG of the ANC to go and tweet about their paying and infiltration of people, it has actually make people and somebody like me who is, I'm questioning if elections are free and fair.
Sure.
When you have those things, you understand? For example, Fresh, are elections free in South Africa? I think over 90% they are free because we have very minor cases of intimidations and things like that. I think they are free. Are they fair? I don't think they are fair. They are not fair administratively because you've got the IEC leaders being deployed by the ruling party. You've got parliament making allocation to political parties who are in government. And you even now have independent candidates that has gone silent about them. We don't see them not receiving the same political benefit as political parties.
Sure.
So I don't think elections are fair. It's not fair when ANC can give, or EFF can give members of another party millions to can sell information to others. It is not fair to do that. You know, it's not fair.
Is it not fair in war and peace? Is that the one?
Is it not what?
Is it not all fair in love and
war? Oh, yeah. Well, look, unfortunately, there's the game. It's not very in love and all peace. But look, we have to live with this as a democratic society.
Sure.
We'll have to live with, you know, the outcomes and the results of democracy. Those with money, it's the same as courts. I always tell people, those who can afford the best advocate or lawyer will always win the case, not because they had a strong case, but they've built a better case.
Sure.
It's the NC has an advantage of being the party in power. They've got the money. They may be lamenting being broke, not paying rent and creditors, but their funders are big. Their purses are big. They've got a president who is supposed to be a billionaire. So I don't think that's fairness. Fairness is when everybody competes on an equal footing.
Sure.
But we can never be equal in politics. There can never be such.
It's like calling hunting a sport, but the lion doesn't have a gun.
Exactly.
You're the only one with the gun.
And the lion not only doesn't have a gun, the lion does not even see the shooter.
The lion doesn't even know it's in a sport. Like, how is it a sport when the lion is not even aware that it's participating?
It's participating in the game, exactly, in a sense. So, yeah, but that's the status of political parties towards election. We'll hear in the coming weeks. Things will be much more clearer.
Sure.
And I think we'll go to elections, 3 weeks now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's jump into the Immigration Amendment Bill.
The
Immigration Amendment Bill.
You know why I brought that topic in?
Yeah.
By the way, we all know that matter has been closed. The immigration bill is before lawmakers now. Né?
But a lot of parties are still carrying on about illegal immigration.
Instead of them waiting for themselves to be in parliament, then they can change those laws. Understand? I mean, I looked at one interview with the Patriotic Alliance Deputy President, Mr. Kenny Kunene, and some lady from one international NGO talking about how to handle illegal immigrants. And I was glad that a week before that on this platform, I was very careful not to call people illegal immigrants because I've said diplomatically, we are not allowed to do that. And this lady said, undesired immigrants and undocumented immigrants. And Kenny Kunene was saying, oh, now they're bringing a new word, undesired. These things are all illegal. He is correct. Undesired, undocumented, it's an illegal offense, but you don't use that word. Nonetheless, I was mentioning this because you look at, except Julius and the EFF, the DA, the Patriotic Alliance, Action SA, and many other. The ANC is also, you know, sitting on the fence regarding this issue, talking about how illegal immigrants in Kenny Kunene's way, he said there must be a mass deportation. So in other words, they must all be picked up who are illegal in the country, whether they are undocumented or undesired. And what I liked about what he said, he actually said there's so many Chinese around. There's so many drug dealers. There's so many people who, it's not only Mozambicans and all, everywhere from Pakistan, Bangladesh, they must be deported outside the country because the numbers of the so-called illegal immigrants who are committing crime in South Africa is going up. And he said, but we can't have a mass deportation. And I wanted to bring this, our Immigration Act, the current, even on the revised bill, even on the treaties we have signed with a lot of international organizations, does not allow that. We cannot do that. It has nothing to do with the ANC. It has nothing to do with any political party that favors immigrants or foreigners. It has to do with the laws of our country. That's why I'm saying political parties, they must take advantage when they're in parliament to can now push their weight to say we want to amend this situation. I personally have worked with our immigration laws extensively and for many years. And if I had my way, I will change some of the things and the way we do them. But the Bill of Rights of our Constitution as well does not allow us to do that. Like, we can't have a mass deportation. Even if we have 1 million illegal immigrants in one place, our constitution does not allow us to take them into the planes, the ships, or the buses and take them outside the country. We're not allowed. There's a process that may take years that we must follow. So the problem is not the political parties. It's not the ruling party. It's not to say the government officials are not implementing the laws. The problem is the laws themselves that allows and protects the so-called, and I'm using the word so-called very carefully, illegal immigrants in the country. Our constitution talks of humanity. Humanitarian purposes and reason, whether you are illegal or not. You know, somebody said to me, so both on this Collins Letswalo of RAF, he is right when he is fighting the laws regarding the benefits of road accident fund. And I said, yes, he is right. But unfortunately, he's fighting against the constitution.
Sure.
You can be illegal in this country and you get involved in a car accident, you're entitled to full benefits.
Then they pay out, yeah.
Yeah, then they pay out. So so I think political parties should put more effort in learning how immigration laws work, the treaties we have signed, the international agreements we are subjected to in order to deal with illegal immigration. But first, realistically, where we are situated, surrounded by six neighboring countries, immediate neighboring countries, the battle against illegal immigration, it's a long-term battle. It does not need a shotgun approach. We need to amend the laws, upgrade the laws, and make people to understand what is because I hear people are saying it's asylum seekers. Majority of these people are not asylum seekers because they don't come from war-ravaged countries.
Yeah.
Understand? It's economic seekers. They are seeking economic opportunities, majority of them, because they see South Africa as the land of milk and honey and opportunities.
And like one person once said on social media, no asylum seeker goes home for Christmas.
Kenny Kunyan said that. He said that on that interview on TV. He said, why do you call these people asylum seekers when every December they go home? And then they come back every January. So what is it that they run away from home for 11 months? And then for 1 month, it's okay, they can go back. So there's nothing asylum seeking in this process. It's economic.
So change the laws if they're not working for the country.
That's what I'm saying. Amend the laws. Change the laws. And also, people are saying the government is failing, the borders are porous, and all that. Some government officials, and I've worked in the border management environment, you know, last 7 years, some hands are tied, bro. Hands of public officials and border guards, they are tied. To say a border guard may find fresh crossing Limpopo River on top of a crocodile. Understand? And when the person, they allows that govern and control that border guard to say, once you catch fresh, what are you going to do? Exactly. You must just make sure the crocodile did not injure you first. Take it to a hospital if you are injured. Get medicines, get nutritious food. Then after you are fit, determine why were you here. How many months will be like that? We can't even afford to keep you in prison because you are not a prisoner.
Sure.
You are not yet prosecuted and convicted.
And can't throw you back in the river.
We can't throw you back in the river because then we are committing murder.
Exactly.
I mean, we have situations. I've mentioned the situation of Botswana, for example. Death penalty, what is the English word of death penalty? There's a legal word that's used. It's still a capital punishment.
Sure.
Is still available in Botswana. Now, if we have somebody who has murdered somebody in Botswana and he runs to South Africa, and we can't send that person to Botswana because our constitution does not allow us to deport people to countries where there's capital punishment if they're going to be facing capital punishment.
That's penalty.
You see, it's some of those technicalities that we are faced with as a country. But I want to hammer on political office bearers, especially lawmakers, MPs, to know that they are there to make the law. They must stop crying about laws when the powers are vested in them to change the laws of the country.
What do you feel the EFF and the PAC are creating a tense atmosphere? Where does that come from?
Look, you remember last weekend I was part of the team that was sending Tate Motsoko Pheko off.
Oh yes, the past weekend.
The past weekend. And by the way, my military gear fitted very well.
Are you for real?
It did. But I had conversation with obviously former colleagues, former guerrillas, APLA members. Something sinister happened. If you looked at Tate Motsoko Pheko's funeral, none of the PAC leaders were there. That's something I observed. I actually asked, you know, former comrades, say, what's going on? Even the president of the PAC was not there. The family, I've heard, they had said, if he comes, he will come and just sit there as a normal person, and he's not even going to win the program. Now, that is sending a very strong message that there is actually a boiling pot within the Pan-Africanist Congress of Azania. Then I hear some of the, you know, and I still call APLA forces because APLA, unlike MK, was not
disbanded.
It was not. They are still, they are not active guerrillas, but they are still a unit that is, you know, on its own. And majority of them, I mean, I was with 2-3 APLA commanders there, and they were saying, hey, by the way, these forces are not going to vote. We'll do what we did in 1994. I was in the forefront of the people in 1994 that said we are not voting our own political party, which was the PAC. And they said they're doing it again. And that, that was shock. But in having discussions with them, I could pick up that people are saying they are ready to go into a war.
Oh, wow.
I mean, one of the elders of the PAC that I can't mention, that has known me from childhood, was there, and he said to me, I hope you guys are training youth. I hope you are training youngsters. I hope you are preparing them in case civil war erupts. This is an elderly person in his 70s, in case violence erupts, and it is going to happen. Coincidentally, Fresh, on Sunday, I had lunch with one of the EFF leaders in Trinidad. We have excellent relations. And he just came to, you know, eat something from my mind, and I stole something from his mind. And he said to me, you know, Botsang, I want us to talk, because yesterday I used to work with him at Olive and Holt Bosch, which is the most crime-ridden country in South Africa officially today. Olive and Holt Bosch, in the south of Tswane, it's number one with crime, murder, robberies. During the course of the week, do you know what happened? The leader of Action SA in Gauteng, sorry for diverting, they are a provincial chair who is their candidate for the premier, and the youth league leader, both of them, they were hijacked by six armed gunmen
in Oliven.
In Oliven Old, and they were released in Benoni after about 5 hours, but they are safe. Now, I was discussing with this guy to say, now look what happened at Oliven. He said to me, look, I was doing door to door and in Soshanguve, the north of Tswane, Winterfeld. And he says, you know, something is scaring me. Even when people welcome us in their house, they say the outcome of this election is going to determine whether they are going to take the war to the streets or not. Look, it don't be a guerrilla war with people. I think what may happen, and I wish the government may guard against this, is people anger is going to be shown on the street with violent activities. And despite violence, people will resort to destroying properties. And we had another building burning up in Joburg this week. But people are going to do it. It's not going to be accidents. If I can tell you, if load shedding comes back after elections, people are going to go into the streets because they will say we have been fooled.
Sure.
And my concern is, it looks like the government is putting a blind eye on how people are agitated and irritated. People are very angry. Unemployment, drugs, insecurity. It's unsafe to live in South African streets, whether it's during the day, at night, even in security complexes. It has become unsafe these days. And I think if the government intelligence is not paying attention to such areas that are very dangerous, we will find ourselves, if the situation politically, the status quo is going to remain, the ANC, DA, and EFF. If the situation comes out that way, service delivery will remain the same.
Sure.
That will anger the people. You understand? People may start and say, and I want to put a disclaimer that one is not agitating for violence and election, but to say a caring government must put a mind in front to say, what if things go this way? The arrival of MK, which is a very militant organization, the arrival of MK is sending shockwaves. We have heard some of their members and leaders talking violent activity to say if Zuma is not going to win the ballot paper, there'll be war in the country. I will not, as a politician, take such statements light because it takes five people. I always said to somebody during the Apla days, cells, I used to tell people that you can start a revolution in this country with 10 people, one commander and one person for each province. You plan an action all at the same time, that you are going to detonate bombs all at the same time to send a message. That's how unguarded revolutions are very dangerous. And I see the country going through an unguided revolution where there's no guidance, there's no leadership, there's no strategy, there's no planning from government to say, if this happens, what are we going to do?
How do we counter it?
Yeah, and for me, that is my fear. And we saw the sample on the July 2021 uprisings that were contained to some areas only, but we have potential as a country.
So what do you say to someone who says your very statement in itself could be problematic?
Look, problematic in which sense, Fresh? I'm saying
that you're planting seeds in people's minds.
I'm not planting seeds. I am saying if I was a security official, a government official, I will worry about such things. It's a conscientizing. I'm saying to government officials and the law enforcement, guys, Bulamato, be careful.
Sure.
These things are possible. They're dual. They may happen.
The natives are more restless than you actually think.
And you can't blame. You can't say, why are they restless? We have free and fair elections. No. You can't talk like that to a person who's on drugs or who's drunk or who's angry. Remember, anger on its own, it's actually a drug because it drives you.
Sure. If you add hunger to it, it's a problem.
To do things that you will not normally do.
Sure.
And for me, it's a concern. I'm not planting seeds. It's a concern. It's a wake-up call to law enforcers, to those who are buying votes, to those who are bribing other people in rigging votes or in dismantling other political parties, to say, but that's a dangerous space you are playing in, because those people may end up killing each other.
Sure.
You know, to stand up and come with a reckless statement to say, we have paid people to disrupt MK. What if those people start killing each other and it spreads into violence? That's the kind of things that I'm saying political office bearers and law enforcers must guard against such. We don't have control over drug dealers in South Africa. Gangs and drug dealing. We don't have control. Oh, whether it's in Westbury, whether it's in Cape Town or KZN, we don't have control over these drug dealers. And you know why? Because when it started, we just saw it and started focusing on a small drug peddler, a small drug user, the one. We never thought it will grow so big to become a big business that it will have gangs of drug dealers. Now they are killing each other and the government has no control over them because we let it slip through our fingers.
Absolutely.
So it is, for me, it's not. And I talk from a security point of view.
Sure.
For the love I have for my country and my people. And the sad part is, if violence broke in South Africa, black people will be killing each other. And that's the sad part about it. And we can avoid that as a nation.
Absolutely. University of Stellenbosch Senate votes against a national position on Palestine.
Yes.
Can we talk about that?
Did you see that? It's so embarrassing. I actually saw Dr. Blade Nzimande crying, lamenting. I saw that whole interview lamenting. What happened to us?
Why would they even go as far as having a official position?
With the Senate of
yes.
Look, they went because there's been calls from around the world as academics. This is academics now saying the learning platforms in Palestine are not existing. They're being destroyed.
Sure.
They were not talking about the politics and they were talking about academic, which was correct for a university to make a statement to say. So the University of Stellenbosch, them leading the pack, the whole Senate voted to say, no, things are normal. There may be a war there. There's no genocide. And it is not destruction of a learning process. I mean, that is very embarrassing. I saw Dr. Bongi Nkosi Blade Nzimande, his anger, I could actually resonate and relate to that. To say, how can Stellenbosch do that? Remember, South Africa has a position, which is official and legal now due to the ICJ, to say there is genocide in Gaza.
And even if there isn't, free Palestine.
And exactly. So now for one of the prime universities of this country, which is also operating in the international arena like Stellenbosch, and sadly I'm a postgraduate. My postgraduate is from Stellenbosch. I feel so embarrassed. Comes up and say, no, there is no genocide there. And actually, it is not destruction of the education platform in Palestine. I mean, for them to say that, it's actually the same as taking the flag of the country. And let me go back to my professor, Advocate Chulima Donzela. She's one of the professors. As I wonder what was her vote at protecting the flag of the country. And then you attack an official diplomatic and judicial position of the country. What's the difference? Why would Stellenbosch act against the Department of Higher Education that they are managing them? Now, Dr. Nzimande said he's going to lobby students, alumni, academics, and everybody else to, you know, launch an attack on Stellenbosch for their behavior. But you know, Fresh, what does it say to me? It demonstrates, when people talk of the Stellenbosch mafia, the white monopoly capital of Stellenbosch, how Stellenbosch and all those wine farmers and white people in the Western Cape, they think they are having a country of their own. You understand? This is one of the demonstrations of how people in the Western Cape, particularly areas like Stellenbosch, George, Cape Town, are thinking. They think they are not in South Africa. For them to go and issue statements, they vote. And these are academics, qualified, educated people. And they issue statements that are against a national policy and a national position. Our position on Palestine is not only political. It has been historically political.
Sure.
We now have a judicial position whereby we went to the ICJ. We also have a diplomatic position where Minister Naledi Pandor is going around the world lobbying other countries to support the South African position. Now you take an academic institution going against that. And I think one of the few occasions I will agree with Dr. Nzimande and say Stellenbosch must be put to where they belong. Unfortunately, I'm still looking for a job, you know. Otherwise, I was going to tore my qualifications and put it in the dustbin the way President Mugabe did with his honorary. But this one I studied for, it was not honorary.
Yes,
you did. And but it's very embarrassing, actually. I want to hear and see what Advocate Professor Madonsela is going to say about the institution that she's one of the most senior people there, and she holds Stellenbosch very proud. What is she going to say about this position?
Can we wrap it up with a brand new shiny president for Russia?
Why did you have to put it there? Brand new, hell no, it's not brand new.
No, it's a brand new, it's a new season, it's a new term, it's a new six-year term.
Yes.
Putin has been president for 26 years almost.
Not president. At some stage, he was a prime minister. But he has been the leader. He has been the leader.
But
of
we
Russia.
Know he was prime minister, but he put himself there by putting someone else so that he can bring himself back.
And amended the constitution.
And then he can say, no, but that guy there amended the constitution. Mina was there as prime minister. But I come back.
This is the third time as a president, five times as the leader of the country. And look, he's 71, 6 years. He'll be 77 when his term ends in the office.
Sure.
Well, he still looks like you know, young, fit, and healthy. But he was inaugurated this week. Something sinister happened there. In all BRICS member states, it was our president who was not there at the inauguration. I pick up such things. Mm. Whether he couldn't make it or he was not invited, one of my reliable sources says he was not invited. I doubt if Putin will play that low. But the person that said that to me is very close to the Russian government. He said he was not invited. I'm like, I don't think President Putin will play to that level. I think Mr. Ramaphosa could not make it. He's busy with his campaign in the country at the moment. But he was the only BRICS member state. Even the new ones were there. And President Putin has been inaugurated for the third time as the president, for the fifth time as the leader of Russia. And he's sitting with six more years to his belt. Still being faced with the war in Ukraine.
Sure.
And when that happened, actually, the inauguration this past week, the prime, you call him Prime Minister Xi Jinping. What is Xi Jinping in China? Is there?
It's the Prime Minister, Xi Jinping.
Xi Jinping.
It's Prime Minister.
Are they called Prime Ministers? I thought there's a title they are using.
It's a PM.
He took advantage of attending the inauguration, but something very interesting diplomatically and in the international fora. He also did much more of the East European official visit. He visited a lot of states in eastern part of Europe. And in the western part of Europe, he only visited Macron, Emmanuel Macron in
France.
In France.
Yeah.
So some of the things he, President Jinping covered was the war in Gaza, as well as the continued war between Russia and Ukraine, the situation there. You know, Europe is now going to be a little bit relieved because they are now entering the era of a little bit summer, few weeks of warm, so they don't need much of the Russian gas. But I think Xi Jinping is playing a very important role in the geopolitics. China being a member of the United Nations Security Council, China being friends to Russia, but they still maintain their diplomatic friendship with countries like the USA or members of NATO. And I think this move of Xi Jinping to the eastern part of Europe was actually to galvanize the support of countries like Turkey, you know, and other Eastern Europe and Middle East countries. So these are some of the things that has been happening in there. But yeah.
Would you say it's because of the size of China's economy and the level of how much of a superpower China is, that they can afford to seemingly double dip the way they do?
If not triple
dip.
Yeah, because they are also in Africa and the Middle East.
Yeah.
Look, Fresh, I think it's the strategy that China built over 50 years.
Sure.
China had a 50-year plan, 52 years ago. They sat down and they said, this is what we are going to do to the world.
Sure.
To maintain diplomatic relations, to build our army. They still have one of the most equipped armies in the world. But also, they will infiltrate that, or double dip, as you call it, due to the economy. You find Chinese products everywhere in the world.
Sure.
You know, even in countries that are not friendly with them, they will make a way that their products are there. So I think it is the size of their economy.
Sure.
And also, to have a leader who China is known to be a very militant, you know, old school Mao Zedong-led country. They have a leader in the Communist Party that has managed to be more of a diplomat. If you look at President Xi Jinping, he's more of a diplomat. You can keep peace and talk to almost everybody. And that's how diplomacy works. You may not like everybody around you, but you make it possible that you can converse and engage and talk to everybody, even those that you don't like.
We have something in common at some stage.
Yes, at some stage, you understand? And China has avoided skirmishes and wars. I'm still not happy with the Chinese regarding the occupation of my spiritual home, you understand? And the way they treat His Holiness, the Dalai Lama, personal, but that's personal. But China has managed. I mean, they had a dispute with India, understand, regarding the occupation of land that is historically Indian land. But they've managed to keep India as diplomatic and economic friends.
Sure.
And they're both economic giants in Asia.
And they're both in BRICS.
I mean, founder members. So I think they've got good leadership, which had a vision. And they managed to apply their vision very well over a number of years. Look, it took them years. It's not something that happened overnight. One of the economic models that I adore, and I spoke about it before, is the day China decided to say, in order to make our goods cheap, let us go and take all the factories out of the mainland to cut on pollution, to cut on traffic, to cut on cost. We are taking all our production factories to the shores, to the seashores.
Sure.
So when something moves with a conveyor belt, a gene from the factory machine, with a conveyor belt, it moves into a ship, packed and wrapped to be thrown into the dustbin of China, Africa, and now the Middle East. And for me, that model, it's a thinking country. They reduced congestions in the cities. They created more employment. Their goods became extremely cheap because they've cut some of the unnecessary production lines. And that model, I want all the economic students to go and learn how China came with that model. It can help our country. If we can just be creative. I mean, one of the leaders of the world, just to add, who has copied what China did, it's our friend in Burkina Faso. Did you see what he did this past week? He took a quarter of the military budget. He bought tractors, thousands of tractors, fertilizers, and gave it to small-scale farmers to say, we are not going to import food anymore.
Yeah.
We are going into the rainy season. Here is capital. Here are the seeds. Here are fertilizers. Go and plow. Go and farm and feed yourself as a nation. That is leadership.
Sure.
The same way Thomas Sankara visioned it in the years. So there is hope in Africa. There's hope for us. Let's get behind the elections. And let's come with young, vibrant, good leaders.
Sure. And by the way, it's President Xi Jinping.
Is he president?
Yes, president and the general secretary of the Communist Party of China.
Okay. Yeah. But there's a term. They call them premiers or something. There's a term they use. He's a president, yeah.
Sure.
But they are like the one in North Korea. How do you address him?
The supreme leader.
The supreme leader. The Chinese have that, something like that.
Yeah, supreme leader Kim Jong-il.
Yes.
Son of Kim Jong-un. And brother to King. What's the sister's name? I think the sister is also involved somewhere there.
Yeah, they run the country.
Yeah,
father, sons, and sister.
Where do we find your social media?
Botangm@gmail.com. Nothing changed, only the dress code and the looks. 0824859100 and at Botangm on social media handles.
And if you think he's your cup of tea, you have the number also.
because that's for business.
Brother is, yeah, the business of...
Not a glass of wine. They will offer, but I know wine.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, no, that's been interesting. Good topics we covered. I'm happy this week. And I feel good. I don't know why fresh, but this past week, I've just been feeling good.
You look good. You feel good. So you will do good.
I'm tired of fresh this, fresh that. Fresh looks younger. Fresh is clean. And he's got shiny nails. I'm tired of that. So I'm responding.
Yeah, okay. Oh, yeah. The sister is Kim Yo-Jong.
Yeah.
Yo-Jong. Kim Yo-Jong.
So they are all Kim Yo something.
Yes, absolutely. Coming to you from AM Studios, we're part of the Africa Podcast Network. Shout out Pezulu Works for the cinematography, all of the imaging, artist The Floor Fraser, and our guest Botsang Modimo Amemuyilwa. Creative producer Kuvesh Mohan, show producer Kiletso Modisa King. Email us at waw@africapodcastnetwork.com. Till next week, have an incredible Politrix week in spite of yourselves.